got the professor. And, John, it appears that I don't know if there is a torch that has actually been passed, but has Jalen Ramsey become the new outspoken cornerback in the league, picking up the torch from Richard Sherman?
No question. I mean, he's taken it to a new level, probably not a good level, because, you know, where Richard, I think, would be more politically correct. I mean, he'll say whatever he's going to say, but you never really hear him rip players like you saw Jalen Ramsey. And, like, Jalen Ramsey's taken it to another level because he's doing press coverage on it. And what I mean by press coverage is almost doing it in one-word answers. I mean, it's concise. It's nasty. It's, I think, infuriated a lot of people around the league. But it's one where, you know, hey, he's now the one. And I guess this article must have come out at a good time for him, because could you imagine once this article came out and him ripping just about every quarterback in the league, how Tom Coughlin's going to take to that?
I wondered about that, because Coughlin is a guy who is as old school as an NFL coach gets. And basically what it was is Jalen Ramsey reviewed all of the opposing quarterbacks, and it was kind of funny. He said which guys stunk and which guys didn't and who was overrated. He didn't care for Ben Roethlisberger very much, which no. I was like, Ben.
At least Ben got a better grade than Joe Flacco, who he said just sucks.
Yeah, he didn't like Flacco.
That was his sophisticated rating.
He just sucks. He was what he said. It was, no, he just sucks.
He just sucks.
He just sucks.
Well, I'll tell you what, at least he backed up his boy Blake Bortles. It seems like, John, on that team.
But you see how he did it?
No.
The playoff Blake Bortles.
Oh, the playoff Blake Bortles?
Yeah, the playoff Blake Bortles is good. Okay. Didn't take a good review, I guess, of the regular season.
Was he wrong in any of his reviews? Because I think he's wrong on Roethlisberger. Yeah. Roethlisberger's a good quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he's the third best quarterback or fourth best quarterback in the league. So I think, you know, he's wrong on a lot of these. I mean,
Allen, trash.
Trash, yeah.
Yeah, it was Matt Ryan, overrated.
Mm-hmm. Wait, mm-hmm. Josh Allen?
Yes, the kid up at Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't even seen him play yet.
Yeah.
So he's talking about college.
No, I guess he goes back to his college tapes, and because, you know, he actually reviewed, he says, hey, whenever Wyoming would play anybody good, any big FCS school, you know, he would always suck. He would always be terrible.
Can I go through some of these reviews? Because it's actually pretty funny. Josh Allen, he's trash. Baker Mayfield, Ramsey says, gets how he was the top pick. Lamar Jackson, he's going to do a good job. Joe Flacco, he sucks. Aaron Rodgers, doesn't suck. Tom Brady, doesn't suck. Tyrod Taylor, underrated. Marcus Mariota, good game manager. Jimmy Garoppolo, I guess he's good. Deshaun Watson, will be an MVP. Carson Wentz, will be an MVP. Jared Goff, average to above average. So he liked Goff. I was amused by it.
Yeah, but I think there's a pattern to what he's doing, and where the pattern would be is that, you know, any of the old school guys, no good. If you're young, unless you're Josh Allen, then you have a shot.
Yeah, that's true. He said Andrew Luck, don't think he's good. The other guys, Roethlisberger was, quote, decent at best. Kirk Cousins, quote, he's a winner. And so I was in a league where nobody says anything critical about other players. I thought it was at least kind of amusing. And look, if you don't mind being hated, you can get an awful lot of attention in this league.
Oh, no question. And I think that, and I mean, you saw the interception that he had down in the Seattle game last year, down in Jacksonville. I mean, what he ends up doing, and he does this so often, is that, you know, he'll almost take a bow, then come over, and then, you know, just kind of bow to the fans and then throw the ball in the stands.
All right. John, you've probably already seen this, but I'm going to ask Jim and Dave. What do you think Jalen Ramsey's review of Russell Wilson was?
Too short.
He said too short. What do you think?
He said he's good.
Good.
Okay.
Gave him one word. Good.
No,
he did say good.
No,
good.
He gave it at Scott Service. Good. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Good.
Good.
Yeah. And you can see now what's the age of Russell Wilson. So if you put all these numbers together, the quarterbacks that are 30 or under, it's like they get okay grades, somewhat good grades. Anybody over 30, for the most part, they get bad gauge. Is this age discrimination?
Could be a little bit. You know, I hadn't thought about it breaking down that way, but I think you're right, John. It's anybody that's past the age of 30, he's not on board with.
Hey, John, any word, because I see there's an injury to Alex Okafor down in New Orleans. Good defensive player, but Any word on Marcus Davenport? I still scratch my head over that selection and how they moved up to get him.
Yeah, he's just been banged up with some leg injuries, I think, for the last week. And they don't think it's going to be anything serious. And you know how it goes in practices nowadays. If there's a doubt, you leave him out. And that's what they're pretty much doing. But no, it doesn't seem to be. I think the Okafor one has got to be a little bit more of a concern because, you know, he had the Achilles last year. And, you know, you always worry. It's like, okay, you've got some kind of a leg injury. Can this be a soft tissue one that could be pretty bad? So I think there's more concern about him than there is Davenport.
Seahawks signed a linebacker today, John, Eric Walden. What can you tell us about him?
Well, he's a veteran. I mean, he was one of the signings that they tried to get in Indianapolis and really didn't work out as well. You know, good, solid, strong side linebacker, can put his hand in the ground and rush. And you can see, you know, what they were looking for. They looked at Lamar Houston. They looked at bringing back DeAndre Moore. And I think that they like Walden because when you're looking out and you saw the injuries today, I mean, I couldn't see you know, Marcus Smith, he wasn't around, and a couple of the other defensive. I think it's just one where you knew that they need to get some kind of an experienced pass rusher or maybe an experienced linebacker because both groups are pretty young. And so, I mean, I think he fits what they were looking for. Like, for example, you know, the two names that I kept on bringing up, you know, were Connor Barwin, who ended up signing with the New York Giants, and, you know, bringing up Elvis Dumervil, you know, who I think is, you know, he's older than Wyman. So it's like, you know,
hold on now,
well,
Joe.
Maybe not, but you know, but no. So that's one where you know, just getting an experienced hand. And again, they want as many guys that can put their hand on the ground to rush, just for depth purposes and evaluation purposes. I know they feel good about the pass rush, but again, I think Walden. It's a nice addition, and again, I'm sure it's for the minimum. You know, not a big investment, and you know, he'll have a chance to see what he can compete against. Because right now, you know, the end spot and the you know, linebacker spots are pretty thin, particularly on the outside.
Now with Walden, because Ryan Grigson is here as a consultant, yeah. Correct? So that seems a pretty clear line to draw. Grigson was the GM. Did they sign Walden as a free agent, or was he a draft pick?
No, he was a free agent.
Yeah, so that they brought him in here so you get an opportunity to see what will happen there. I've always been surprised. The Seahawks haven't drafted many linebackers. I mean, they've got two of the best, maybe the two best pair in the league in Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, but you were bringing this up, Dave, that they haven't had a lot of a big number of linebackers there.
Yeah, I remember being disappointed in a lot of drafts. No linebackers taken. But, you know, after the Aaron Curry thing, gosh, we were just talking about him today, John, and I was saying, you know, my experiment of unscrewing one head and putting it on another person's body. Lofa Tatupu's head on Aaron Curry's body would have been the greatest linebacker in history.
What if you put my head on Aaron Curry's body?
It would still be an improvement.
Are you sure?
But the question is, Danny, is there going to be a helmet big enough to accommodate your head?
A very well-aimed, that is a good insult, Professor. Very, very appropriate, well, and very accurate.
We'd also have to convince you that you're not that slow. Okay. That would be really tough.
Somebody would say, like, no, part. You can actually make that. No, there's no way I'm going to be able to run there that fast. Like, no, seriously, like, your legs actually work better now.
Well, and speaking of linebackers out there today, John, you saw it. And I was actually on the other side of the field, but Cyril Grayson, the receiver, got into it. And as Danny said, I like the way you put this, that KJ and Bobby are kind of the regulators out there. They're the guys that sort of, they're the police. And saw a little
By the way, I got to the bottom of Bobby Wagner just shouting and yelling at the coaches today.
Oh, he wasn't yelling at the coaches, was he?
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was yelling at Grayson.
No, he was yelling at the coaches. And so apparently what it is, the games that Pete Carroll plays, right? You know, he has these grading systems and point systems for defense and offense on certain plays. And, you know, one of the things that I guess Pete does, and he does this for competitive reasons to get the guys, I mean, he'll sometimes exaggerate or underestimate some of the numbers because what he wants ultimately for them to come out in a tie. And so apparently on one of the plays that I guess either got good numbers for the offense on the scoring or bad number for the defense, Bobby just thought it was so unfair. So, and again, he was just screaming and yelling. And again, I mean, these are positive things. I mean, he's like, so what's Bobby mad about? He's mad about the grading system on certain plays and the points because of the competitive nature of the defense versus the offense. So it was a positive thing. So, you know, but it looked kind of like, whoa, what's he doing? He's like, you know, he's yelling like crazy. He looked like Richard Sherman yelling at Daryl Bevel or Richard Sherman yelling at one of the coaches. But again, what it was, he was complaining that he thought that either his defense or the offense got unjustified grades.
Well, and I tell you what, you don't see Bobby do that very often. So when he does, it's kind of like, whoa, you know, and he's just great leader.
greatly.
No. And he and KJ are just perfect. And that's the difference on this team right now, because it's gone from a defensive back, defensive line-oriented leadership to linebacker leadership. Yeah. And I'm not talking about the offense. I'm talking about the defense. And I think that it's a different type of leadership, but it's a good type of leadership.
Hey, John, this is none of my business, but I'm just curious. You mentioned earlier Ryan Grigson. Mm-hmm. When a guy comes over to get to be a consultant like that, how much do they get paid? Any idea?
My guess is nothing. I mean, you get offset, but because my guess, he's still under contract to the Colts, and so you get him at a very reasonable price. So it's like he's making the same money. He just gets they'll take a standard fee for his his job as a scout and all that stuff, and then do an offset. And so the Colts get a little bit of relief, but I'm sure that he's making the $1+ million now that he was making back in Indianapolis.
Gotcha. Well, and also it shows how secure of a guy John Schneider is, mm-hmm. to bring another guy in that was just recently a GM and, be open enough to sort of have him share his ideas with John I thought it was a pretty cool sign.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I know that things didn't work out in the last couple of drafts and that for him, but I mean, he's still a good football mind. I mean, he's come from Baltimore, he's come from Philadelphia. I mean, he's been in good stock, and say what you want. I mean, okay, so he doesn't get credit for taking Andrew Luck. I mean, that was just the luck of the draw. But that draft, I mean, he got T.Y. Hilton, he got Kobe Fleener, who was a good tight end for the earlier part of his career. That was a great draft. I mean, when you put that first draft that Grigson had, with all the guys there, I mean, there was at least five, maybe six starters that came out of that draft. I mean, that will go down as one of the top 10 drafts in the last 10 to 15 years.
Philadelphia and New England on the schedule tomorrow night. John, what are you going to be looking for in that one?
To see the reaction of the Patriot fans with the Eagles, because it's going to be nasty. I mean, that's one where that there's a little bit of vindictiveness. That certainly the fans are going to be all over Lane Johnson. Because remember, Lane Johnson was the one who was ripping the fans this offseason, with the Patriots and ripping the Patriots and all that stuff. And so that'll be interesting to see. From the football side of it, I mean, they'll get maybe a quarter at the most out of Tom Brady. I think that, maybe they'll put an extra blitz on to try to wake things up for, the backup quarterback, Nick Foles, who's going to be starting. I mean, no Carson Wentz and all that stuff. A lot of injured guys right now on the Eagles. But, no, it should be a fun game because, again, it's the repeat of the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, it's just it's a preseason game.
John, the big news from the Seahawks today is Rashad Penny, the rookie, he had a broken bone in his hand. I guess they're calling it a broken finger, but sounds like it was kind of more inside his hand. He had surgery. He's out 3 to 4 weeks. They're haven't ruled him out from being ready for the start of the regular season. I'm not that worried about this. Am I wrong? Should I be more concerned about the setback that it has for his rookie season?
No. I mean, can look at some of the other things. I mean, would you rather have a pinky finger, or I guess it was it the index finger or the pinky finger?
I think it was the index finger.
Okay, so would you rather have a screw on the index finger of one hand versus an ACL by Darius Geis? Mm-hmm. The first round pick of the running back taken, Sonny Michel from the New Orleans Saints or from the New England Patriots. He has a really bad, he has a knee injury and he had to have a procedure on that. He's questionable for the start of the season. In this case, I mean, it's the same surgery that Robinson Cano had, and Robinson was able to bat within 3 weeks. And so, a little protective device and all that stuff. I wouldn't worry about this one at all. I mean, the only thing that's costly is the fact that he's going to miss 3 weeks of, valuable practice time and game time that helps his learning curve. But then ultimately, and remember, I kept on saying this and nobody tended to believe me at the draft. It's like, why do people need to rush him in? I mean, they just bring him in gradually. He's going to be a very good running back in this league. And I thought, and it looks like it continues to be, that Chris Carson's going to start. So now it's going to be maybe a little bit of a slower into that conversion. But no, I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, and I think that is it's a nice benefit to have Chris Carson because he's looked so good, mm-hmm. just solid as can be. And, not only that, he's catching the ball of the backfield and everything. I didn't know Rashad Penny's left-handed. I guess
I didn't know that. Didn't know that either.
Yeah, that's what I was told today by a fairly reliable source. And then, the fact that they can go in and do the surgery for broken bones, I mean, it sounds bad that it's surgery, but I guess the thing can heal in like 2 weeks, a lot faster than if you just let it sit there. And mm-hmm. I get the feeling also, John, that if it's during the regular season, it probably still would have done that. But if he was the starter, I wonder if, he could.
No, he probably would have gutted it up and tried to play. So, that wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah.
I too, Dave, am not left-handed.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just letting you know.
Oh, thanks for
which
that
hand, which hand was the broken bone on?
It's on the left hand.
The left hand.
Right, yeah, which is significant because he's left-handed.
Left index. Yeah. But, you know, when you...
Are we all saddened that Atiba Rubin ended up getting on the injured reserve list?
Wait, what happened to Tuba?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he went on IR. I haven't seen what the injury is. But
that's too bad.
I'm sorry.
Was he in Denver?
No, he's in Oakland.
In Oakland.
He's one of the 85 players that are in their 30s with the Oakland Raiders. It's 15, but, I mean, he's one of the 15.
Yeah.
Why have the Raiders gotten so old?
Because John Gruden doesn't like rookies.
Hmm.
I mean, he would rather have his coaches coach veterans and guys that have been around for some time. And that's why I'm a little concerned about that. Because what I worry about is that you get a team too old, and what you end up doing, you get a lot of injuries, and you don't have a lot of guys that can play a lot.
I just wonder about the Raiders, John, and simply because Gruden, when you look at his record, it wasn't that spectacular, and he's been out of the game for so long. I know everybody loves him, and I do too, but I don't really see it with Oakland this year.
No, I don't either. I mean, I think that their defense still is a big question mark. I think you can see from the play calling the other night that it looked good. I mean, John Gruden can call some plays. So the offense, I think, can be reasonably good. They got a nice touchdown run from Marshawn Lynch. So that part is positive. The negative, though, is I don't know if they got enough talent on defense and if they're good enough, and they better find some way to get Khalil Mack signed.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you think Gruden's dragging his feet on signing Khalil Mack?
Because they haven't talked. I mean, I guess when you don't really have a big offer to be able to judge, that would be dragging your feet. This would be the ultimate dragging of the feet.
Why is he doing that?
I get the feeling, because they came out and somebody started to speculate that, they don't have the money to be able to do it. But clearly they do. I mean, I think that's a bogus thing because, I mean, Mark Davis is going to be making big money when he moves to Vegas. And if he needs to borrow, he can get all those different things. But it comes down to, I think John Gruden's taken the position. It's like, I question paying quarterback type money, $20 million a year to a defensive player. I would rather take the tack of taking care of the offensive guys and then trying to do a little cheaper on defense. That seems to be one of the theories. The other theory is that maybe, just maybe, Aaron Donald will get done first, and then they can kind of adjust and see if they can get something done. There's rumblings down in Los Angeles that maybe Donald could get something done this weekend.
John, J.J. Watt says he has no doubts whatsoever that he'll play week one against the Patriots. What kind of a year do you expect from him?
I worry in one sense. I think he's going to have a great start to the season. And if you're putting somebody up to be defensive player of the year for the month of September, I would nominate J.J. Watt as one of your top five. But what I worry about is the way that he trains, which is intense. There's always been that thought that he may not be able to get through another season because, again, I mean, he works that body so hard, and people worried about this 3-4 years ago, that it's like he works the body so hard with his training that it could hold back on what he does as and how long his career can be. And one thing about him, he is one proud guy, and if he doesn't play to J.J. Watt level, I mean, it's not out of the question for him just to say, I'm going to pack it in. But I think if you want a guy for the first month, maybe the first 2 months of the season, he's your guy.
John, last thing for you, Jadeveon Clowney, is there any progress on toward where he's gonna get a deal done in Houston? I know there was a lot of talk that he might get a top shelf contract, but he's unsigned to an extension, right?
Yeah, so it looks like they're just going to kind of wait on him. They got the 50-year option and all that stuff, and so that may be more of next year's deal than this year's deal.
All right, Professor, we always appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you missed any of the Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton, you can download the podcast right now, 710sports.com. It is brought to you by Coors Light. This hour, Danny David Moore, is brought to you by Venue Kings. We've got the Professor John Clayton. We've heard from him. Now it's time to check in with Tyler Lockett. We'll talk about his comeback route this season next. We've got Tyler Lockett with us right now. What's going on, man?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing better than I was about an hour and a half ago when my heart was either in my throat or in my stomach. I'm not sure which. And you were down for a little bit, and I was worried, man.
No, yeah. I mean, I was down for a little bit, but, they said everything was good. So I was able to go back in there and make a couple more plays, be able to try to help the offense out.
How are things going so far?
I mean, it's going pretty good. I mean, I've just been trying to work on being able to get behind the defense, being able to get myself open, whether I'm on the outside, whether I'm in the slot, and being able to try to be more of a leader, more vocally on the offense as well. And so I think each day I'm taking steps, I'm taking a lot of strides and just trying to continue to be consistent.
Was there some testiness out there going on between the offense and defense?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got some days. I mean, obviously we had a day off, and so everybody's, you know, testosterone got high, and then everybody wanted to start going back and forth. And, I mean, it happens, but it makes us better.
It's healthy, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's healthy. It's one of those things that people don't take it out, you know, outside of the field and, you know, use it to go between each other in the locker room. It's something that just happens on the field, makes us better. Sometimes you go back and forth, but it's all good.
And usually it dies right as soon as you step off the field.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you how you think this new offense will be different specifically for you. What are some of the things that are different that you're doing now because of Schottenheimer's new offense?
Well, I mean, I think we got to wait and see. Obviously, once we start getting into the games, but I think it's allowed me to be able to play my game a lot more, being able to be more patient, being able to set people up more, kind of do some of the things that I was doing at Kansas State, you know, because I have more time, especially when I'm in a slot, to be able to pick and choose which way I want to go and how I want to run certain things. And I think that's the thing that kind of brings out a lot of my game. Sometimes when you go to certain teams, you got to get used to the concepts, get used to how fast we need to run them and how we need to get out of our breaks. And based off of what Shoddy brings, it allows us to be able to be more creative and take more time.
I saw, Tyler, when you talked to reporters earlier this week or last week, that you said you were only 75 to 80% last year. The first time I'd heard you admit that. How did you adjust and deal with that last year?
I mean, just like anybody, when Kobe Bryant's missing 10 out of 11 shots, you know, he figures out how to be able to get back to his game, even if he has to take a break from the things that he knows he's great at. Obviously, you have to be able to adapt in whatever situation that you're in. And obviously, you know, I knew I wasn't able to be the Tyler Lockett that I knew I could be, but I was still able to be the Tyler Lockett to be able to help the team be successful and fulfill the role that I was given. You know, like I always say, sometimes when you know you can't run past people the way that you usually do, you set people up even more to be able to run past them still. And, you know, I was still getting behind defenses and stuff like that and still being able to get open. And I just tell myself you was doing that around 70%. So imagine when you're back at 100%, how it's going to be, you know, and I don't really pay too much attention to the analysts and stuff like that because all they do is look at the football and, you know, obviously they have their type of mindset of what type of player they want you to be. And so they create this type of hype. And like, to me, it's more of a fake hype because football is not a selfish sport and it's not an individual sport. So obviously each and every one of us will want to be able to achieve and do so many great things to where we're known, you know, to where everybody's talking about how good we are and stuff like that. But in order to be a great team and a successful team, there's roles that are given. And in order to be great, you have to accept the role that's given and to be able to be great at that role. And for some, their role is big enough to where they will be known. To others, their role might be small to where it helps make the team a better team, but they might never be talked about or considered as good as they could be. And so that's the thing that I focus on the most, regardless if I'm 70% or 100%, is being able to do what it is that I was called to do by my team to help them be successful.
When do you think it's remarkably mature perspective? And I say that as someone who's covered pro sports for almost 20 years now. And a lot of guys, and I won't say most, but a lot of guys will look at it as, hey, I'm an individual corporation here and my body is my business and I'm about getting the most out of this business that I can and making the most money I can. When you talk about sort of football not being a selfish sport, where do you think your vision of what football is and what it means to be a good player and a good teammate comes from?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes from how it was when we were kids. You know, obviously I played with my best friends all the way up to some college. You know, they went to college with me too, and I was able to play with them. And it was that bond. It was the very thing that brought us all together. Like, sports was something that we all connected with and that we all did in our free time, whether it was basketball, football, baseball, or track. So it was something that we depended on, but it was something that brought the best out of us. It was something that brought our family together. Like, we looked at the pros that football allowed us to be able to have. And sometimes when you get caught up in football being a business, you lose the sight of the joy and the type of, like, success and happiness that it brought you. And it brought the people around you that cared the most about. And so sometimes, like, yeah, people get caught up in the money because, I mean, it is a business and they treat it like a business. And so you should look at yourself like a business and being able to make decisions that will help you be successful and all that type of stuff. But there are times where you have to be selfish and there are times where you have to be selfless. And you got to be able to pick and choose on which one you're going to be, but also to know that both of those things can help the team be successful, because sometimes you have to be selfish in your role in order to help the team be successful. And sometimes, but you can't be selfish to where it's all about you and all about yourself. And so I think that there's enough success to go around. And that's the biggest thing that you have to know, is that no matter what happens, no matter how many opportunities that you have, there's enough success for this teammate and there's enough success for you. Just because this person is successful doesn't take away all the success that you could possibly have. But you have to learn how to be happy for one another and not just be happy for yourself.
Man, your fourth year coming up, Tyler. By the way, that was great.
I appreciate
the way you put that. But coming up on your fourth year, when you think back to your rookie year, do you how much you've grown? I guess to me, like the NFL, the years in the NFL were like dog years, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're like 7 years, you know? But
yeah.
Is that what a dog year is, by the way?
One year, 7 years.
1 year, 7 years, yeah. So anyway, wow, that's a lot for me. I played 63 years in the NFL then. And Tyler, you're coming up on no, but
you're 28 for Tyler Lockett.
Oh, I don't want to do the radio math.
Can you get to the question, Dave?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jim. Yeah, I will. When you look back on your rookie year, do you sit there and go, "Man, I have grown a lot"? I mean, do you reflect on that? And do you feel like you were kind of innocent, you know? And when you were a rookie, compared to what you know now?
Yeah, I think looking back from my rookie year to now, I have grown a lot mentally and being able to understand the business atmosphere more, being able to understand, like I said, how to be able to treat yourself as a business, make decisions as a business, because you not only have to do that during the game of football, but you also have to do that in the game of life.
Right.
When businesses come at you and they want you to represent them, like, you got to be able to know how to make decisions and all that type of stuff. I think that our vets, did a great job in being able to teach us a lot of these things that's going to be able to help us be successful off the field, tools that we're going to have to be able to use not only in football but also in life after football. And so I think that, with that being said, football teaches you a lot about life.
Yes.
There's things that school can't really teach you, and that's just, the truth. There's things that school can't teach you about life that sports can teach you about life, and that's why so many parents put their kids in sports, to be able to teach them adversity and teach them all those types of things. And so whether it's through football, whether it's through teammates being able to give us everything that we need, it gives you a deeper understanding of what you need to be able to be successful. And so that would have never happened for me as a rookie had I not been able to come to a team like this.
This hour, Danny Dave Moore is brought to you by Venue Kings. And now we're finished with Tyler Lockett. It's time to turn our attention to what we learned. That comes up next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It is time for what we've learned. It's brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess!
Guys!
How are you?
Wow, what a day.
What a day.
Running
Lots of
from VMAC, only to sit and watch the end of a Mariners game that lasted 2 hours.
It sounded like it was going to be done at 2:30.
2:30.
And then it didn't end up getting done until 3:30, so it was hurrying up to wait. Yeah, it was great.
It was awesome.
That was awesome. And the way it ended, D. Gordon, couldn't have happened to a better guy.
Right? Sounds like we will be talking to him at Edgar's Cantina on Friday, so you'll want to tune in for that.
Should be a lot of fun.
He's awesome. He's I talked to him in the clubhouse the last Mariners home weekend when I was doing the post game, and it was when they were kind of at their low. And he was very intentional in the way he talked, and he made, we were in a scrum, and a couple people realized he wasn't really saying much, and so I talked to him for a little bit longer and just looked me right in the eyes, answered the questions, didn't give any, you could tell he was down, not down, but not towards me. It's very respectful, and I like him.
What did we learn today, Jess?
Well, starting off today, we learned a little bit about doctors.
I think it's strange how they always have to go to Philadelphia to get these things done, but it seems the way they're doing it these days.
He's going to Philadelphia?
Yeah, he flew to Philadelphia yesterday to have the hand surgery.
Oh, I thought that's where the hernia surgery was.
That guy's there too.
The guys that are the best of the best apparently are in Philadelphia.
I don't think that's necessarily true. Maybe
why are they always going there?
The best drywall hangers live in Philadelphia. I don't know if all the best doctors live in Philadelphia.
Well, there's, you know, those guys get hot, like these doctors get hot. And for me, it was Richard Stedman.
They like, get okay, hot like the guy at Crab Stable or something?
He's on a streak, yeah. It's like a hitter.
Like Jerry DePoto was up until recently.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerry DePoto was flaming hot up until some of these recent acquisitions. His touch has cooled off.
I'm trying to picture a doctor getting hot.
Yeah, you interview the surgeon afterwards. He's like, man, I'm doing really good surgery right now. I'm on a roll.
I was in a zone.
I'm in the zone. But Stedman was up in, first he was in Tahoe is where I found him. And he was a wizard with my knee. And then he was in Vail.
Be careful when you say you found him in Tahoe, because it kind of sounds like he was operating out of a back alley there.
No,
I found him there. He was sleeping in a refrigerator box, but man, was he good with a knife.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture these hot doctors, Dave. Do they go home and tell their wives, you know, hey, man, I had really good surgery today. And are there ever times where they go home and go, yeah, I botched that one a little bit?
I was off my game today. You know, remember there was that, what was the guy? Andrews down in like Alabama, somewhere south.
Dr. James Andrews.
James Andrews. Everybody was going to him. And then I heard about this. Yeah, so the other thing is, you know, I was always big on like, I don't care if the team doctor is really good. I want to go to somebody else. I just want the objectivity of that. And so I always was and I had to get in a fight with a trainer one time about my ability to go and use another doctor.
Wait, the trainer wanted you to use their doctor?
Yeah, and I was like, no, that's not happening. And it was my rookie year, too, I believe. So, yeah, it was one of the tougher things. It helped me become a pro because I had to go in there and sort of, you know, face him down and tell him, hey, look, man, that's not happening. And, you know, so it's the whole hot doctor thing. I mean, if a guy has surgery and, you know, like I would say with Ed Calfain, like he just, everybody said they couldn't fix my left shoulder when I had that stupid bike wreck, and he fixed it, man. And, you know, I didn't think that was possible. It's actually better than it was before. And I'd had surgery from Job, the guy down in L.A. So, you know, and then you tell other people that, and then, you know, that's how they become hot.
I've got a friend named Jeff, and he is a surgeon. I don't think I should spread his business all across where he works, but his idea, we went to Kentucky a few years ago for bourbon tasting, and his idea was that surgeons should have a yearly combine, like football players do, where you measure their dexterity and stuff.
Yeah.
Because he was like, I'm being serious. Like, I'm completely serious. Like, some of these guys, they've got licensed like 40 years ago, so they should be tested regularly. You should be able to get, like, what they're... I was like, so would you have, like, base measurements and stuff?
Yeah, like hand steadiness.
40-yard dash.
And all the hospital administrators line up to draft you?
They could do an 8-stitch sew-up in 6.8 seconds. Yeah. You're like, oh, that's really good.
Right. Yeah, I would want to see how steady is his hand. You know, have like almost like a staring contest. They get him go head to head, see whose hand is steadier, they can hold for longer.
How would you do on that?
I don't think it's very good. Pretty good.
Yeah, I think I'd do okay.
Decent.
Weren't you surprised though to hear that a broken finger, you had to get on a 5-hour flight to go to Philadelphia?
No,
that there wasn't anybody in Seattle that could handle that.
Well, I think it's a matter of kind of the type of surgery that's done, of how invasive it is. I was a little surprised, but not that big. The fact is, I think Robbie went there too. I think I think Robbie went to Philadelphia.
What if Frank
like
Clark
Robinson
did?
Cano.
Frank Clark had the hand surgery as well.
What was the thing last year? There was the blood spinning. Was it the circle? There was
Regenikine.
Regenikine, where everybody was going down to L.A. to get that done. Mm. Yeah, that was hot back then.
It was. Regenikine was a hot doctor.
Yeah, Philadelphia hand doctors right now, they're the new hotness.
So hot right now. Earlier we had Tyler Lockett on the show, and we learned a little bit about football age.
To me, like the NFL, the years in the NFL were like dog years, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're like 7 years, you know? But yeah. Is that what a dog year is, by the way?
One year, 7 years.
Yeah. So anyway, wow, that's a lot for me. I played 63 years in the NFL then. And Tyler, you're coming up on. No, but
you're 28 for Tyler Lockett.
Oh, I don't want to do the radio math.
Can you get to the question, Dave?
That wasn't very nice, Jim.
That was a long pause, though. There's a lot of like, oh, so I'm discovering something in my brain right now. Let me, but Jim, you should be sympathetic to that because that happens every day on the show for you.
Yeah, that wasn't very nice. See, you see that shot I got back there? Dog years, football years,
I thought you'd
7 years.
Super interesting because the dog was involved. Yeah. He seemed kind of impatient.
Yeah, Bark is available wherever you get podcasts. Did you know
I that? Noticed that Jim's ears perked up when I said that.
Yeah, here's the thing is that you can't just call it Bark because there's an exclamation point at the end, so it's Bark!
Well, yeah, because you'll say something about, yeah, it's about arborists or whatever.
No, Bark! Like, you can't just say Bark wherever you get podcasts. There's an exclamation point that needs to be honored.
Okay, I'll do that in the future. Thank you, Danny.
You bet.
Finally today, again with Tyler Lockett, we learned a little bit about the make-believe world.
You might be the fourth most targeted going into the game, and you're not even supposed to get the ball, and you might go for 100 yards.
Yeah.
You just never know. And so it's one of those things where it's kind of like the lottery. You just got to guess, but fantasy football is easier than a lottery because people end up winning more than being able to pick seven numbers.
But here's the thing is that when they win, then they think it's due to some skill they have and that they're talent evaluators. And like, oh, I could be a GM in the NFL. And I want to be like, you know what? Like, you're living in make-believe world. Like, you boarded a little train and you went to make-believe land and you won your make-believe prize, but it doesn't really matter because it's not real life.
Well, yeah, I had an acquaintance that thought he, because he was really good at fantasy football, would be a good scout and possibly a GM.
It's unbelievable.
It's really weird. Like, where they think that, like, yeah, I was able to identify him. It's like, he's actually already gone through an incredible culling process. First of all, to make college football, then to be drafted in the NFL, then to, like, win out and get the opportunities on the field. Like, all of the different levels that he's had to make it through first, and you're like, yeah, I saw something in him.
Yeah, that was the hard part, all of that stuff. You did the easy part, but, no, you know, I think I've never gotten into fantasy football. But, you know, I don't know why, if you're a player, you even pay attention to that stuff. The only thing is, I'll say this did chap my tail one time. I was on Dory's show, and he had this producer named Jake, and there was some video game, and on the digital side, what is that?
Your avatar.
Yeah, avatar. Thank you. Anyway, it was like, it gave me these really crappy ratings for, like, speed and all this stuff, and he's like, what the heck? I mean, what's with this? You know, and I'm like, I really don't give a crap how some, you know, company in Japan rated me as a player. You know, I played 9 years in the league. And so, and he's like, yeah, but I mean, look at these numbers. And I'm like, dude, you're killing me right now. I don't care. I don't care about this stupid rating that I get. Or
I bet most players don't either. They just have Jack somethings telling them that.
Yes.
Doing the same exact thing.
Do you know that I have a video game right now at my house that includes David Wyman?
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Do you?
I do. Tecmo Bowl.
Yeah.
And actually, Wyman is a great inside linebacker on it. And he's one of the few guys in the game where if you play it right, you're able to use him to stop Bo Jackson, who is the single greatest video game athlete ever created.
Really?
Tecmo Bowl is unbelievable. Like, Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl. If you get him on certain plays, he just sits there and zigzags back and forth across it. But Wyman, you juke the blocker, and then you dive right into Bo's leg, and Bo will go down.
You know, I'm going to send you a picture. There's one of not very many. I have hardly any football stuff up in my house, but there is a picture of me jumping over the line and stuffing Bo Jackson on the goal line. I'll send that to you.
That's awesome.
So that's a video game actually based in reality.
Yes. Yeah. Was Bo the most impressive athlete you ever saw?
No. Actually, not really in... Yeah, I mean...
Well, for what he could do as a baseball player, too.
I'll tell you, the baseball part of it, Marcus Allen, to me, was more impressive.
No kidding.
Marcus Allen would bring it, too. I mean, he was a decent blocker. Like, he was a tough guy. I'm just thinking of Raiders. Mm-hmm. You know, Willie Gault, watching him fly down the field. There's a guy named Randall McDaniel, who we called Ronald McDonald because the coach called him that one time. Anyway, he was like a guard that was super impressive. And supposedly he had like this 10,000 square foot weight room in his house and constantly lifted weights. He's the guy that I told you that story where he picked me up off the ground and said, "You ain't going nowhere." I was like, oh, man. This dude. You come across some freaks in the NFL, you know, people that are like, wow. And that's not done by drugs or PEDs or anything. They're just incredibly superior human beings.
When McDaniel picked you up, were your feet dangling?
That's the way I picture it, but I don't know that they were entirely off the ground. Yeah, I was kicking him like a little kid.
Let me down.
I'm going to use the 3-1 off the tee. I can tell you that it was very humiliating. And always when that stuff would happen, you go, oh, that's going to look really bad on film.
Oh, that's going to do it for us. Want to thank Mike Leake for joining us. Tyler Lockett, the Professor John Clayton, Jessamyn McIntyre is on the board, or is producing our show. Who do we have on the board for us?
Matt Harden, the
Harden.
Tart.
Little tart.
Our lovable tart, Matt Harden, back on the board, fresh off his Pearl Jam experience. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 on Danny David Moore.